So tonight's topic is humility. Oh, feel free to move wherever would be comfortable. And it always fascinates me how much humility is valorized across all the world's traditions. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam place a high value on it. Confucianism and Taoism place a high value on it. In fact, most of Chinese culture, Japanese culture, humility is an essential part of the cultural heritage. And it's funny, Buddhism doesn't really talk about the word explicitly. It's not a word that you find very commonly in traditional translations of Buddhism, yet at the same time, it's something that is implicit in certainly in compassion and loving kindness, in disattaching from the ego, from developing patience, all these sorts of things that are cornerstones of Buddhism. Humility would be an essential part of them. It's almost like this unnamed secret sauce that goes throughout Buddhism. And so what is humility? Humility comes from the Latin word humus for earth. And it's very much about being down on the ground, having a very grounded sense of self. Another way to say that is being on the same level as everyone else, meeting everyone else in a kind of eye-to-eye way. And it might be easiest to understand what humility is to some extent by thinking about its opposites. And certainly one very obvious opposite would be pride or arrogance. That's usually stated as the quote-unquote opposite of humility. And it's certainly true. Well, how can I say it? Humility is, by its very nature, something that predisposes us toward connection and also really, in many ways, sets us up or opens us up toward spiritual unfolding. It really has this these profoundly rich qualities. And certainly if I'm proud, if I'm walking around with pride, if I'm arrogant, I'm not going to be open to the gifts of others. I'm probably going to be walking around offending others if I'm proud. And I'm probably not going to really be that open to the action of grace. I'm going to be walking around more with a kind of, I have the answers already sort of attitude. And pride or arrogance is a funny one because there are very obvious forms of pride, like the person who literally believes I'm better than everyone else. That's sort of an extreme, obvious version of pride. But there's all kinds of subtle versions of pride. I mean, anytime we make a judgment about another person, we're implicitly saying, I know better than that person, you know? And it's a very tricky, very subtle thing, you know, when we, you know, these little ways that we might even just momentarily elevate ourselves in some way. And so that's one thing, certainly when we're elevating ourselves above somebody else, we're no longer on the ground. We're no longer seeing eye to eye with them. Now, another opposite of humility concerns this very funny word, the word special. Now, the word special has both positive and negative connotations. And it's a really funny word if you think about it. The word special is etymologically related to the word species. When I say something is special, literally what I'm saying about it is, it is its own species. It differs in kind, in its very substance, from other things that you might think were in the same category. And so if I'm calling myself or any part of my life special, It's as if I'm saying, I'm in a separate category. I don't belong to the rest of the human race. I'm in some special privileged elite group. And again, this is a tricky one also, because maybe there are a few people who walk around who will just say explicitly, I am special. But again, there's all kinds of subtle ways that we make ourselves special, or we make some part of our experience special. You know, no one would understand, you know, blah, blah, blah about my life, or this sort of thing. Or, you know, a lot of people suffer X, but I have X, Y, and Z, and nobody else has that. Like, all these ways that we create these narratives that make our experience somehow unique. And that uniqueness is almost a badge of honor, you know, when it comes down to it, ego loves anything that makes itself unique. You know, even if it's not very pleasant, at least it stands out in some way. And so that's another, special is another kind of opposite of humility. But paradoxically, yet another opposite of humility would be things along the lines of low self-esteem, self-hatred, these sorts of things. And we don't think it, sometimes we think of that as extreme humility rather than the opposite of humility. But just as if, you know, it's not humility if I'm placing myself above everyone else, it's also not humility if I'm placing myself below everyone else. You know, if I'm saying everyone else is worthy and I'm not worthy, it still is a kind of self-fascination. It's, you know, it's much less fun than being arrogant, but it still is complete self-fascination of, I'm suffering so much and I'm such a horrible person, I'm below everyone else. That state of mind probably means I'm not really going to be in a position where I can acknowledge the gifts of others because I'm just so concerned about myself. At most, I may appreciate people who are kind to me or something like that. One of the quotes that's on the quote sheet is, I think, really captures something profound about humility. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking less about yourself. And so humility is a profound gift in many ways. Because humility toward others means that we're actually open to others. And we create the space to allow others to share their gifts. And I think we've all had the experience of how wonderful it feels when somebody opens to us and really acknowledges something wonderful about us and allows us to be, you know, sees us in a positive way, you know, that sort of thing. And in a way, humility, the humble person is the person walking around allowing others to open up. It's almost like, you know, creates the condition so that others can bloom. And then part of humility also, it's very closely related to a sense of wonder and awe. You know, there's a classic statement of humility in the New Testament, the meek will inherit the earth. And this is a line I've talked about, I know, before in my Dharma talks, that, you know, more conventional Christian understanding is that, you know, someone's sitting there, you know, I'm just meek, and then God comes along and says, you're the lucky one, you inherit the earth. But a more mystical understanding of it, you might say almost a Zen understanding of it, is if I can be meek, that is to say, if I can drop my stories and my attitude and everything else and just be present to the world, suddenly I'm present to the wonder of all creation. And so I'm, quote unquote, inheriting the earth. You know, the earth really belongs to the person who, in that particular moment, is just open to experiencing it. Now, one very tricky part of humility is humility around experiences of pain. because pain has a kind of arrogance to it. It's very, very funny. And this is, I'm speaking specifically of emotional pain. Part of it is that when we're triggered, we go into the fight-or-flight response. Now, the fight-or-flight response, of course, this developed evolutionarily. You know, it developed originally, you know, say I was in the ancient world and suddenly I'd come upon a tiger or something. And so fight-or-flight does everything you need when you're facing a tiger. It makes your breathing very shallow, speeds up your heart, shuts down digestion, you know, immune function, all that stuff doesn't matter in the moment, sends all the blood to the outward muscles. It also makes thinking very rigid, very clear. You know, the moment I'm facing the tiger, I don't need abstract poetic thought. Like, everything becomes very simple, you know, very, very black and white and basic. And it's, you know, it's exactly what we need if we're fighting lions and tigers and bears and that sort of thing. It's not exactly what we need in our modern comfortable relationships. But of course, when I get triggered, all that stuff kicks in, and among other things, the black and white thinking kicks in. And then the black and white thinking is very arrogant, is very, you know, well, we have to do it this way or no way, you know, and this sort of thing. And so it's something to watch. It's something just to be mindful of. Pain is also, I like to say, the great internal propagandist. It always has narratives of all kinds about how it's so important, it's more powerful than anything else, it's more real than anything else. Pain loves to spin all these narratives. And there's a funny way that there's even a, how do I want to say it, a self-confirming aspect to looking at the world through a lens of pain, in the sense that, you know, suppose I have a narrative that, you know, nobody really gets me, nobody really understands me, then there very well may be ways that I will unconsciously cherry pick people in the world who, for whatever reason, in whatever situation they are, whoever they are, they're not going to be particularly apt to understand me. And then I'm going to open up to them, and then, of course, they're not going to understand me, and then I can say, oh, see, nobody does understand me. I even tried, you know, this sort of thing. You know, pain loves to do that kind of cherry-picking experience and then saying, see, I was right all along. I remember a psychology professor once was talking about Joseph Stalin and the tremendous trust issues that he had. And he said that in his adult life, we really only have evidence that Stalin trusted one person. He actually made a political treaty with this one person that he trusted. Unfortunately, this person he trusted was Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler betrayed him by invading Russia. And so it's kind of a classic example of someone, you know, who's convinced that no one is trustable and then proves that by trusting one person who is probably the least trustworthy person in history, you know, that kind of thing. So humility is absolutely magic in human relationships, in our experience of the world, and it is also an absolutely essential ingredient in spiritual growth. Because if I expect growth to be convenient, it's not going to be. If I expect growth to come to me and meet me on my own terms and show up in the way that I want to be handled, you know, that's not growth. Growth is always going to ask for more sacrifices than I think I'm capable of. Not more sacrifices than I'm actually capable of, but more sacrifices than I think I'm capable of. You know, that kind of thing. It's always going to push me beyond what I think my limits are to, you know, closer to what my actual limits are. So I think at this point I will share the quote sheet. The first quote is actually from a book, from this little book. And I suppose I should tell you the brief story of this little book. It's written by a lawyer, John McQuiston. He was living just an ordinary secular life as a lawyer, and he had some kind of midlife crisis, and he thought, you know, he realized life was completely meaningless, and he wanted to find something which would provide meaning to his life. And so he searched, and he found the Rule of Benedict. Now, the Rule of Benedict, this is written by Saint Benedict in like the 4th century, and it's the rule that essentially informs all monastic life in Western Christianity. All the monks, all the nuns, they either follow the Rule of Benedict or the other people who wrote rules, Francis and Dominic and Saint Ignatius and these people, they based it on the Rule of Benedict. So Benedict has had this profound impact on monasticism throughout the West. But it's the nature of the Rule of Benedict that the way it's written in the original language, it makes the most sense if you're a monk, and it's kind of hard to apply if you're a secular person out in the world. And so what this guy did, and I thought it was really quite wonderful, he went through the Rule of Benedict and he just selected out these individual parts that just contain tremendous wisdom and kind of reframed it so that it would be applicable to modern secular people. And so it's a quite beautiful book, and the title is simply Always We Begin Again. So you can look at that if you're interested. I'll read this passage about humility. Benedict has this passage where he talks about the 12 stages of humility. And so these are just stages 2 and 3 in Mr. McQuiston's rendition. The second stage of humility is to distrust our own will. Our wants are insatiable, and our will is the product of those wants. Our pleasures, our needs, our wishes, all are mere self-interest, and the demands of self-interest are never-ending. Our desires are the path to disaster. At every turn, there is something more to acquire, something to distract our attention, something to divert the unchangeable footprints we leave behind. Day and night, we must return to humility and use it as a compass to guide us on the true course. Therefore, the second stage of humility is not to love our own will, nor to find pleasure in the satisfaction of our desires, but to carry out the unfathomable purpose of our being, to fulfill the design that can only be discovered by overcoming our own cravings. For the function of existence and of our lives is not ourselves. The third stage of humility is to accept our limitations, even to death, to accept that there are events outside our control that will control us and that have ultimate power over us and that our will not be done. So, powerful thoughts from Mr. Saint Benedict.
Is that in the new author's words?
Those are the new author's words. Probably Benedict's words would have a little more about God and Jesus thrown in there.
Still sounded pretty Catholic, though.
Well, yeah. You can certainly trace a straight line. So some other quotes. A Chinese proverb. Be like the bamboo. The higher you grow, the deeper you bow. A Filipino proverb. To a person who has true humility, words are vows. Wow. From St. Augustine, there's something in humility which strangely exalts the heart. There are a lot of Christian authors mixed in here because of the nature of the topic. Christian humility does not consist in denying what there is of good in us, but an abiding sense of ill desert and the consciousness that what we have of the good is due to the grace of God. And so really, yeah, just an acknowledgement. How to say it? I think one thing that's become very clear to me as I've meditated over the years is I think all of us are just a hair's breadth away from being such incredible saints or incredible sinners. And it's certainly clear to me that just at certain key moments in childhood and other points in my life, if I did not have the right kind of support, I could have been, you know, a criminal, a horrible person, you know. And so there's so much grace and so much blessing that went into making me the person that I am, you know. And it's very easy to take that for granted and say, well, I'm a good person, you know, and I did it myself, you know, and not to acknowledge the profound blessing it took to get me to where I am. From Henri Frédéric Émile, there's no respect for others without humility in oneself. From TR, keep your eyes on the stars and your feet on the ground. I love TR. From James Barry, the author of Peter Pan, life is a long lesson in humility. From the great poet Rabindranath Tagore, we come nearest to the great when we are great in humility. And from Tagore's friend, Mr. Gandhi, it is unwise to be too sure of one's own wisdom. It is healthy to be reminded that the strongest might weaken and the wisest might err. From C.S. Lewis, as long as you are proud, you cannot know God. A proud man is always looking down on things and people. And of course, as long as you are looking down, you cannot see something that is above you. From Ernest Hemingway, there's nothing noble in being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is being superior to your former self. From Mother Teresa, if you are humble, nothing will touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know what you are. Need some water. From the great Christian mystic, Thomas Merton, who really saw a tremendous connection between Eastern and Western spirituality. Pride makes us artificial and humility makes us real. I love that one. Mm-hmm. A lot of humility is just being real. Madeleine L'Engle, who wrote many children's classics, humility is throwing oneself away in complete concentration on something or someone else. Sri Shimoy says, only humility knows how to appreciate and admire the good qualities of others. Wayne Dyer says, practice radical humility. Take no credit for your talents, intellectual abilities, aptitudes, or proficiencies. Be in a state of awe and bewilderment. From Jesse Jackson, never look down on anyone unless you're helping them up. From Laura Lee, an actress who wound up with leukemia and wound up dying young, a disease and its treatments can be a series of humiliations, a chisel for humility. So true. Cornelius Plantinga, a humble person is more likely to be self-confident. A person with real humility knows how much they are loved. From Marion Williamson, we tend to lack humility toward love, to patronize it rather than bow toward it, to put mundane considerations before the emotional need to hold someone in our arms. I quoted this one before from Rick Warren. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. From Anand Mahindra, if you aren't humble, whatever empathy you claim is false and probably results from some arrogance or the desire to control. But true empathy is rooted in humility and the understanding that there are many people with as much to contribute in life as you. From David White, one of my favorite poets, honesty is grounded in humility and indeed in humiliation and in admitting exactly where we are powerless. And Simon Sinek, one of my favorite authors, humility, I've learned, must never be confused with meekness. Humility is being open to the ideas of others.